Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go, Draft Knicks. Here we go. Welcome to another edition of Draft Nation. My name is Joe412, and I will be your host for the next 60 minutes. We got a 60-minute special tonight. Got two guys on. They're going to talk baseball, so get ready. I know we went into spring training here. Pitchers and catchers reported last week. We got some games to talk about, and, of course, the upcoming season and what they're going to think about some of the new stars that are upcoming from the ranks of the prospects. But before we begin, as always, I want to thank our longtime sponsor, iHeartMedia, where you can find all your favorite music, radio, and podcasts all for free. And for those of you that haven't listened to our show before, Draft Nation is a nation of draft knicks. We're a national e-magazine that hyper-focuses on all four major sports and their professional drafts. So if you're a fan of coverage related to player scouting or mock drafts or free agency, salary cap provisions, and, of course, the needs of your favorite teams, well, then you are in the right place. And tonight I have two guests for the full length of the hour. I've got Rick Moore and Rob Crete joining me here. These guys are baseball experts and some scouts. I'll let them introduce themselves in a second. But Rob and Rick, are you guys ready to go on the clock?
Yeah, I'm ready to rock.
Ready to go.
Cool. Well, Rob, let's start with you. Why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself, and then I'll rotate over to Rick and let him do the same thing before we get into some of our questions.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Hey, I'm a senior baseball writer for Knight Sports Productions and It Sports Magazine since 2018. And right now I'm really working a lot with Amped Up Sports, and we have an online presence there on Facebook and other spots. So I'm really excited about being here, and I'm very excited about the upcoming baseball season.
Great. How about you?
Rick. Joe, been with Knight Sports for seems like all my life, probably about 20 years on baseball and football, and really enjoy it. Been doing the shows for many, many years, and get a kick out of it, and love to get on and talk to the people.
Well, good. Well, thanks, gents, for coming on. And before we do a preview of 2024, let's do a little bit of a review of 2023. The Rangers, man, they came out of nowhere to win the series last year. As we look toward the 2024 season, is there going to be another Rangers situation here, or you know, what are you guys thinking? What team in the National League and what team in the American League do you guys think have a chance to play for the 2024 World Series? And Rick, I'll start with you.
You know, I've got to feel confident this year about the I love the Cincinnati Reds and the Baltimore Orioles in the American League. They've got the young talent. They've got the rosters from building in the minor league, and I think that they're going to make a great showing this year. They did well last year, came out of nowhere. I think they shocked everybody. They certainly shocked me. Of course, so did the Rangers, and so did the Diamondbacks. I'm out here in Tucson, Arizona, and nobody in Arizona, the Diamondbacks, were going to beat the Dodgers and get into the series. So, great series. It was fun having the Diamondbacks and Rangers and some different teams out there playing ball. So we enjoyed that thoroughly. I'd love to see the Reds and the Orioles, who are my two teams, to pick to come out of the pack and maybe get into the final week of the show. If they can overcome the Dodgers and the Yankees, right? We say that every year.
Well, yeah, those are they always get that way. Rob, I know that I'll let you answer the same question in a minute, but, you know, last year, I had to admit, the Braves just sounded, to me, they were like a monster. Like, they were scoring runs, their home run, they were just crazy. I thought for sure it was going to be the Braves. I thought the Orioles might be a year too early, but, you know, with this, and we'll get into free agency in a little bit, but Rob, are you agreeing with Rick here? You see the same two teams, or you got your own favorites?
You know, Rick's got a great idea there, because they're the young teams, and these guys adapted to the new rules faster than any of these more veteran teams. You know, they've been playing with some of these rules, toying with them in the minor leagues. So, you know, the Reds and the Orioles definitely came on, and I see them looking real strong again in 2024. I'm going to go on a limb. I'm going to tell you that the surprise team in the National League is going to be the Pirates of Pittsburgh. I think that they're doing a couple things with the pitching staff. They got a decent bullpen. They got a young team as well. And I think they're the surprise team of 2024 in the National League. I really like Bednar, and, you know, the back end of that bullpen with Chapman. The shortstop, O'Neill, is great. He's a great power hitter. I think that they're going to step up and look a little different than they have in the past. And I'm going to go with the Los Angeles Angels, actually, in the American League. And I know that almost seems counterintuitive when they lose one of the greatest players that we've ever seen come across this game. But they got some decent pitching. They got some they've pretty much restocked that team and retooled it the way they should have. They're probably one starting pitcher away, and maybe that starting pitcher, and I know we're going to talk a little bit about free agents, maybe there's one out there that could really help them get over the top, and they might surprise people in 2024.
Yeah, cough, cough, Snell, right? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, before I go on, because you mentioned a certain L.A. team, and I'll get into Ohtani in a second, but, you know, the Pirates, that surprises me. You know, I think they might be still a year away, but the talent they have on that team in the minors is undeniable. That's for certain. I mean, I think that, in all honesty, I think their best pitcher, their best player, period, in Paul Skeens, their number one draft pick from last year, they're going to start, you know, in the minors with him. I honestly, it's a Pirate thing. I don't expect him to be up there on opening day, which is a shame. He's clearly the best player in the entire organization, minors or majors. But, you know, ultimately, you know, you mentioned a couple of things in there. The Aroldis Chapman signing is sneaky good. You know, if he can reclaim some of that form that he had a few years back, I think he'll be fine. You're right. O'Neill Cruz coming back from a season-ending injury last year, you know, at shortstop has the pop to hit for power. The team has some parts. And I have one of my writers for Draft Nation wrote an article after the season last year saying that the Pirates were closer to a championship than either the other Pittsburgh teams, referring to the Steelers and Penguins. And if you know anything about Pittsburgh, I'm surprised they didn't tar and feather him for making that kind of comment.
Right,
you can't belittle the Steelers or the Penguins. They have two separate but very, very passionate fan bases. And I'm surprised to hear you say the Pirates, but part of me is, you know, I'm sitting here kind of nodding my head saying, all right, maybe. I don't know if they got it all yet, but they've got the ammunition in the minors. It's a matter of how fast they can get it up here and how well some of these veterans play. And, of course, you know, they just signed Keller to a long-term deal. But, look, I know you mentioned a certain team in L.A., so let's go back to L.A. I'll walk away from the Angels and talk about the Dodgers. And Rob, I'll start with you on this one because you're the one that brought it up. You know, Ohtani signed a monster historic deal, $700 million, 10 years. That's ridiculous. But here's a guy that they're paying, if you believe the number, $70 million to this year, and he can't pitch.
So, right.
I mean, they basically they got a guy that's going to come in here and be a hitter. Do you see him ever getting back to form? You know, in pitching, is it going to be worth that $70 million, or do the Dodgers overpay? And are the Dodgers going to Dodger in the fall again and, you know, be the kings of the regular season and come up short in the preseason or the postseason?
Well, the Dodgers are, you know, surely convinced that he's going to come back to pitch and pitch well at a high level. And everything that we know about him as a player says he probably will. Nothing's a guarantee, but that contract is so Dodger-friendly. I mean, you mentioned him making $70 million, but he actually only banks $2 million this year, and $68 of it will actually be in deferred money. So that contract is prohibitive for most of the teams in the league, but for the powerhouse like the Dodgers, it almost seems like a no-brainer, and that just seems weird to say when a guy's making that much money. But we've never seen a talent like this, at least not in my lifetime, that is such a great hitter and a really, really strong pitcher as well. He brings people to the ballpark. He creates revenue for the team. He is beloved by fans. He's a prolific hitter right now. So I think it's a great signing for them. And, you know, I'm really curious about how that's going to work out with all of that deferred money. But as of today, I think it's really going to work out well for the Dodgers.
Yeah, Rick, I mean, he has a point. I mean, the deferred money is interesting. It's reminiscent of Bobby Bonilla and the Mets and, you know, his $1 million a year that he gets, except on steroids, right? You know, Ohtani, to me, you know, look, this was not just a historic deal. It was a historic deal for a historic player. This is a guy that's playing both ways to use a football term. He's pitching and hitting, and both of them are at ace levels, right? And this is a guy that's just really might be the best player of not this generation, but in a long, long time. It's hard to put a comparison on him without, you know, some form of hyperbole. But did you think the deal was a good deal for the Dodgers? Obviously, it was a good deal for Ohtani. But, you know, is this going to work out for these guys long term, or did they overpay for him?
Joe, I think whenever we start talking about contracts of $700 million or $500 million, I think we're opening up a can of worms. It's something that we could spend an entire hour if you had the time. It's so interesting what's happened in Major League Baseball. So we listened to Rob talk about the Angels and about the Pirates, and I'm talking about the Reds and the Orioles. And these are teams that don't have these kind of contracts. They're not signing, you know, luxury tax problems, and they have a situation where look at the Padres last year, the Mets last year, the Dodgers last year, and the Yankees last year. Well, how many of those teams, those four, ended up in the World Series? So is spending $700 million a great idea? I obviously don't think so. Now, seems to be a good contract. Ohtani did some tricky stuff, but then that also gets into the purity of baseball to me, Joe and Rob. I mean, it seems to be one of those situations where, is that what we really want? Do we want the Dodgers to spend $150 billion to get a world championship team? No, I don't. But also, it seems like the teams that are doing that aren't really bringing home the ring. And all of a sudden, we've got the Pirates and the Reds and teams of that nature. So it's a crazy contract. It's structured crazily. But remember, Ohtani said, look, the reason I did this, and I'm going to take this money till I'm 100 years old, is that I want to open up some more money for the Dodgers to sign some more people and give them $500 million. So I don't like the direction, but I love the fact that teams like the Pirates and the Reds can come in there. Or the Diamondbacks, Joe. Come on. I mean,
right.
It's crazy. It's a whole big discussion that we could have about the direction that baseball is going and is spending the most amount of money, guarantee you a ring in October. I don't see it happening that way, and I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, you know, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think that the game is unbalanced already, based on the lack of a salary cap. I think that the NFL and the NBA and the NHL do it right. I know that, you know, the salary cap is, we're never going to get it in baseball. I mean, that ship has sailed a long, long, long time ago. And it's to the point where you look at the balance of the other leagues, and it makes it competitive, you know. And, you know, what the smaller market teams have had to do is exactly what you described. They've had to develop a farm system and bring guys up, and they load up, and then they tear down for a couple of years, and they load up again, and they tear down for a couple of years. And it's cyclical, where a team like the Yankees or the Dodgers can go out and always be competitive because of the big markets and the money that's off, and they don't care about luxury taxes or any of those kind of things. But I'll say this. From the outside looking in, like I scout for football and hockey, and I'll say that the NFL and the NBA, their players, when they're drafted, they play right away. You know, that first-round draft pick, that second-round draft, that third-round draft, those guys are on the field or on the court right away. The NHL reminds me a lot more like baseball, where unless it's the top one or two guys, most of those guys go away. They get drafted, and you don't see them in hockey for 2 or 3 years until they develop, because they're drafting kids at 18 and they enter the league at, you know, 20, 21, typically, unless you're Connor Bedard or Mario Lemieux or somebody like that. You know, and baseball is even deeper. You know, some of these guys, you know, you're drafting kids out of high school, you're not going to see them until they're 25. That's 7 years to kind of be patient. For that reason, how important is it to, in particular, some of these smaller market teams to develop talent that's in your farm system, especially for those guys that just can't go out there and buy those players? And Rick, I'll start with you.
You know, I think that's an outstanding point, Joe. I love you brought that up. And I think all sports fans are shocked by the way that turns out. Like you said, the NBA really and truly only drafts two rounds. That's a amazing. Whereas baseball, I'm going to be wrong here, but 10 years ago they drafted like 60 rounds or some crazy thing, and drafted high school kids and every college player, and offering them $5,000, and it was nuts. And for the exact reason that you say, if you go in the top 60 or so in the NBA, you're going to play. You might play next year. If you don't, you're going to be sitting on the bench or in the G League, and you're going to play in 2 or 3 years. Baseball, completely and totally different. It's an amazing statistic, but I think that it certainly makes it hard to ramp up and know who's going to be great. And they list sometimes 10 of the top prospects for a team, and how many of them are going to make it to the show? And not a lot of them. So it makes it hard to develop that great minor league system and develop from inside. But I think that's purity, Joe and Rob. I love that. I love that teams like the Reds and the Orioles and the Pirates are working from the bottom up, and they're figuring it out, and they're not having to, these kids today are so talented. Their college game is unbelievable. The SEC 25 years ago didn't have a big presence in college baseball. Now they're unbelievable, and these kids are well-trained, and some of these pitchers, Wake Forest and Vanderbilt, throwing 104-mile-per-hour fastballs, and they're getting the coaching and the training, and I think there's a tremendous amount of young baseball talent out there, and I'm hoping that goes against what we were talking about with the $700 million contract. I don't think they're good for baseball. I'd love to see a team build up the farm system and make it go from there. So.
Yeah, Rob, Rick makes a couple of good points in there. I mean, obviously some of these, in his prediction, he's talking about the Orioles and the Reds. You're talking about the Pirates. They're all small market teams, right?
Right.
And, from the perspective of the talent that we've seen come from the college ranks this last year, I mean, LSU, SEC, again, Rick, to Rick's point, SEC have the number one and number two pick in the draft in both Paul Skeens and Dylan Cruz. And these guys, Skeens is going to get here eventually. The Pirates are going to hide him until they can hold him for an extra year, so we won't see him until July more than likely. But Cruz is a guy that can play from day one. And they're a little older. They're not out of high school, so they're like that 21, 22. They're in that bubble where you can see them right away. But, I'll ask the question of you, too. I mean, how important is it out there to develop some of these? I mean, because Yankees, even though they might have a strong farm system, they almost use it as assets to trade to get the guys they need at the trading deadline, and they'll just develop some other guy, or they'll wait. And, if for them, they don't have to worry that much about that minor league system, where if you're the Marlins or you're the Pirates, the Reds, the Orioles, the Kansas City Royals, you need them. I mean, how is it still that important in this game? And or do you think that some of these teams are just holding back and, they putting money away for when they are competitive and they can spend it on free agents in those years when they cycle up and those players are ready to play?
And Rick made a great point about these teams have their top 10 prospects and how many of them are going to, not only make the major leagues, but then be impact players. And it comes down to the batting average, right? So for every 10 of your prospects, how many of them are you going to bring up? How many of them will make a difference? When those teams can hit an average of, 3, 4, maybe even 5 out of 10 on, every now and again, well, that's going to have a huge impact on a young team and a great team. Take a look at what the Orioles did last year. I think that's a great example of that. And it also goes with the whole conversation of being able to spend big bucks on one player, like the $700 million to Ohtani. Once you draft these guys and you get a few that hit and make it to the major leagues, the arbitration process keeps them, on those teams for quite a while before they actually do hit free agency. So free agency is not really, I think, what it was. And I think that maybe this offseason was a little bit of just different from what we've seen in the past with some of these huge contracts to maybe younger guys, because often guys are not hitting free agency until they're 30, 31, 32. And, you might have a couple of really good productive years there from that free agent, but you're not going to get the 10 or 12 years out of them, although they might be getting those contracts. We don't know what those contracts are going to look like on the back end. So coming back to the question is, building up your minor leagues is the most important thing that every organization needs to do, whether you're the Yankees that are going to use those prospects to kind of bring in a Juan Soto or the players, and how many of them that hit in terms of becoming impact players in the major leagues will dictate the success of your team, I think, more so than the big bucks than you throw at the free agents.
Well, you know, Ron, I'm going to stay with you on this question because we mentioned the SEC and we mentioned LSU a couple of times. And there was a real interesting debate, and I'm only bringing this up because I'm Pittsburgh-based and you mentioned the Pirates before. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to let Rick get at this too because I'm interested in both of your perspectives as scouts and as baseball guys. The Pirates had an interesting choice at one. They had the opportunity to choose one of two generational talents. And I know that might be overused these days, but at the end of the day, you got a guy like Paul Skenes who, in his debuts at, low A, high A, double A mm-hmm. last year, threw, I think, a total of 10 pitches in one game, and one of them was under 100 miles an hour. The guy clearly has the stuff, but he only affects a game 35 times in a season because he only plays 35 times. And the Pirates had a chance to pick him to be that generational talent on the mound and be their ace and even be able to bump back a Mitch Keller to a number two spot and build that rotation. And you win with pitching, and I get that. However, the other side of the coin was a guy that was going to play 140 games for you and Dylan Cruz, who was the next Mike Trout, right, whose floor might have been Andrew McCutchen, to use a Pirate.
Right.
And, that's a guy that brought them to prominence – back-to-back-to-back, a few years ago in the playoffs, and they hadn't been there for a while. Did the Pirates make the right choice by picking the guy that's only going to pitch 35 times a year, and see action in 35 games, or should they have taken a guy that's going to impact them 140 times and be in the lineup? And I'll give you my opinion when I hear both of yours, but I'll start with you, Rob.
Yeah, and, I think it's a little bit more nuanced, a little bit more difficult to make that number one choice a pitcher. Injuries, effectiveness, there are so many different variables that might go into their ability to be that impact pitcher at the major league level. And I think it's a little bit of a safer bet, but not by a whole lot, but a little safer to go with a hitter because you can look at the tools and you can see how it's going to play out in the major leagues over time, with maturity, with growth, with gaining power and muscle. I think it's a little bit easier to gauge that. Now, that being said, the idea of having Pittsburgh being able to build a rotation around a very, very strong one and two, we know that's the formula for success in the major leagues. So you can't really knock Pittsburgh for taking the more of a risk with the pitcher. And hopefully it will pay dividends for them by having that impact rotation, which will really springboard them into the elite in the league. So I think they made the right choice based upon their need, but I always believe that a hitter is somewhat of a safer bet when you use that term generational, talent.
Yeah, Rob, and I'll pass this over to Rick, but, Rick, that's right. I mean, we've heard the comparisons to Strasburg with Skenes, and then we've heard the comparisons to Dylan Cruz. If you were the Pirates, if you're Charrington and you're sitting there at one, do you pick Skenes like he did, or do you take Cruz?
Personally, I think I would go with Cruz. I appreciate the points that Rob made, and I basically do agree with that. It's so hard to – you mentioned two people, and you mentioned Trout. And, of course, what happens with these guys? Well, they get injured too. I mean, will the Washington ever recover from losing that a talent like that? No. And, but they're going to pay him a whole bunch of money. Trout, you almost feel like, and I hate to say this, but you almost feel like people are throwing at his hand when he's coming up to bat to get him out of there. And I'm not saying that's true. I'm just saying that he spends a lot of time on injured reserve. So, but I like the idea of going after an everyday hitter who can drive in the runs. Pitchers just seem to get, and I love pitchers. And obviously pitching is one of the secrets of winning baseball is you've got to have a good rotation. Now it's up to five different pitchers, but I think that going with Cruz is the way to go. I go the Jim Trout route. But also, I think I have the solution to all of this is you just keep signing people like Ohtani. So,
I don't think that's an option for the Pirates.
Oh, okay.
I think they missed out. I mean, they put in their bid. They put in their bid, right?
Yeah, Babe Ruth and Ohtani. That's all it is, Joe. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, there's another guy that could play both positions. He was a pitcher and a hitter, from what I understand. So, but you know, no. Here's my opinion on the Skeens Cruz debate, and then we'll put it to bed. I think the Pirates did the wrong thing. I would have drafted Cruz. But I think the Pirates did the right thing for them because the Pirates have a historically bad relationship with Cruz's representation, Scott Boras. And I think there was some signaling there that, you know, he could have decided not to come out or do some things. And it could have been a little bit of a cluster for the team. I think they made the safe pick for themselves, and it's hard to argue against it, right? You get an ace pitcher, and I think Pirate fans in particular, when they look down Baumgartner and they look down the barrel of Arrieta, these guys in their prime, they, regardless of who they had in the lineup, they couldn't overcome it. And so if you get a dominant pitcher, I get that, and you're going to win in the playoffs there. So it's hard to do that, but I almost say this cowardly, like, I don't want to face Scott Boras, so we're going to walk away from that, and we're going to take Skeens because it's the easy way out, and no one's going to complain because we got an ace pitcher out of this. You know, and I hate to say that was the case, and maybe I'm a bitter Pirates enthusiast, you know, kind of watching from the sidelines and saying I, too, would have taken the guy that's going to play 140 times as opposed to, you know, 30 and change. And the risk factor for injury, I get that. I mean, the Tommy John thing is way too common these days. But also, like, these guys, they can get hit, they get hurt. I mean, I've seen players, I mean, it's baseball. People are going to get hurt. It's just is what it is. But speaking of pitchers, and this is something I'm interested to get your opinion on this as scouts and guys that see it. Because, you know, even though I'm a fan of baseball, this isn't the stuff I scout. So I'll just get your opinion on this. Back in, you know, historically, pitchers have been, you know, they would take the mound every fourth or fifth day. They would throw seven innings, and they'd have two pitches, right? A fastball and a curve. And if they were lucky, they'd have a slider as a third. Today, everyone is on a pitch count, and every fifth day they take the mound, and there's still a ton of arm issues. You know, could pitchers not be pitching enough, or is it the fact that they're throwing too many different pitches? We're even seeing kids that are coming out of high school getting Tommy John, is that a matter of coaching or training, or, you know, what's the difference here? I mean, why are we seeing more arm injuries for pitchers? Is it because there's too many pitches out there? And Rick, I'll start with you.
That's what I'm going to go with. That's my theory, Joe. I think that nowadays, obviously, these pitchers are well-coached and well-trained, and they have routines. And I used to pitch in high school and college, and we had no idea of the tricks that they're using nowadays. I mean, the statistics and the analytics and the coaches are just – it's unbelievable. So I think that if it wasn't for the amount of pitches that they're throwing – we all know, I don't have to go back to the Bob Gibson and Don Drysdale days, and those were fun days when they were throwing nine innings and weeks after weeks after weeks. But I really think that they're developing all these new pitches, and everybody's got a changeup, and everybody's got a slider, everybody's got a curveball, and obviously bringing the heat. The curveballs that they're throwing now, and I watch it on TV, Joe, and I cannot believe the way these sliders break and these sinkers fall off of the table. And that's a tremendous amount of pressure on that elbow. Obviously, all the Tommy John surgeries says that that's true. And I think that it is true. I think that there, if it wasn't, then with the tremendous health and the tremendous regimens and the coaching, I think that they could still go nine. But nobody even thinks about that. Now, if you go nine, it makes the headlines. I think that there's just too many pitches out there, and it's messing with the elbow, and that's what's causing all the injuries.
Rob, do you agree with that assessment? I mean, you guys see this industry a lot more closely than I do. I mean, that sounds logical, but it doesn't. I haven't seen a report, or, you know, MLB hasn't come out and said this is a problem. It's an academic. It's like a, you know, there's something some academic study that has said this is what's causing it. I mean, are you in that same camp, or is it something else?
Yeah, I'm with Rick with that. It is the, you know, the amount of pitches, the quality of pitches, and really the speed in which they're throwing the ball. I mean, not only are the fastballs coming in, you know, at 100 miles an hour, but now every other pitch that they have in their arsenal is coming in harder than anything we've ever seen before. I mean, changeups in the high 80s. I mean, it's ridiculous what you'll find some days. And somehow they're training pitchers differently. They're stretching them out. They want them to throw harder and for shorter periods of time. I mean, even yeah. rotations are built to have a guy, you know, go through the lineup maybe twice before they pull them out. They're not looking for guys to go nine innings. So they're building people to, you know, these guys to pitch shorter, throw harder, and it's giving them some real nasty stuff out there like we've never seen. But then it also has the consequences on the back end. I mean, I'm located here in Tampa Bay. Half of their rotation is out for 2024 with Tommy John from last year. These guys coming up throwing as hard as they do. So we're seeing injuries and Tommy John's, like you said, guys even in high school having it because they're throwing harder than ever before. When
so
I was
how
in
do
high
you
school,
correct
I had
that, though? I mean,
and I had the other one. That was it. We just threw junk, and one other pitch was as hard as we could throw, but that was all we did. Now it's just a different game.
So how do you guys propose, and Rob, let's stick with you for a second. How do you propose correcting
sure.
that? I mean, if it's this epidemic in baseball, and we know it's coming, and let's face it. I mean, I was gonna say this a few minutes ago. Baseball is filled with analytics, and you it's the sport of statistics. And you would think, like I just a few years ago when Andrew McCutchen was in his prime, the Pirates had a pedometer on him. So that they could monitor the amount of steps he took in a day so they knew when to take him out of a game because of, you know, they needed to give him a day off. And we see it in NBA where an entire team will rest on a certain day because analytics tells them to do that. Why doesn't baseball have some sort of analytics around this? And is there a way to correct it? I mean, if we know this is happening, even if it's anecdotal, and it's like, well, this kind of makes sense, but has anybody taken a look at it? How do you fix it so it doesn't happen like that?
I think the question is, do they want to fix it? I don't see a concerted effort to really want to fix it. And let's take a guy like Tyler Glasnow that just got traded to Los Angeles, right? He's an amazing pitcher, but he's going to give you four innings. He's going to go through that lineup twice, and you're going to pull him out. He's going to be running out of gas. He's giving you everything he's got, and that's really by design. The Dodgers – they not only did they want that, but they rewarded him with a big contract. So I don't see teams looking to find a guy that has a fastball and a curveball to go seven innings. I think they want the specialist. They want some guy that's going to go, you know, five innings, and then they're going to go to their sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth inning guy. So I guess the real question is, do you see teams out there that are interested in changing what they're doing? Because the analytics say, we just want to change the game and have our specialists come in from the sixth inning on and get somebody that can get us a few outs before then and do it in a way, throwing the ball, like I said, as hard as you possibly can and get as much movement as you can on those pitches as well.
You know, Rick,
Joe,
that's
I have
a great
to,
point.
I have
I mean,
to
is
agree.
There, I was going to say, is there a will there? I mean, like, there. Let me interject for 1 second. Like, in mm-hmm. football, you know, concussions was a problem. Right. And they investigated it. They did some things. The Players Association stepped in because they needed to protect the players. Should Major League Baseball's Players Association step in and do the same thing? Because these guys are getting injured and the teams and the league don't care. And they're burning through these guys. And that UCL, that Tommy John stuff, when they're gone for a year, they've basically lost a year of their career. And with all the rehab and stuff like that, should they step in like other leagues have? We've seen, and concussions are different. I mean, I get that. I'm just using that as an example of it's really happened in both hockey because of the way they turn their heads when they hit the boards. A lot of those concussions are caused based on the torque and whiplash as opposed to their head actually hitting the boards or the glass or the ice. In football, with all that together, and they've made a concerted effort to fix it. Should Major League Baseball step in to fix it? I guess that's my question to you. Is that something they should, or the Players Association step in and say, guys, we're killing ourselves here. We got to do something about that.
You know, Joe, I think the problem with that is, and I don't necessarily disagree, obviously your football analogy is an apt one. You think about roughing the passer. That's a good one because 15 years ago, 20 years ago, back in the days of Butkus, I mean, you could hit the quarterback after about three steps and still blast him. You can't do that no more. But I think, Joe, that that's something that's easier to monitor and easier to change. When you got a guy out there throwing gas at 100 miles per hour, and then he's throwing 91-mile-per-hour sliders and 92-mile-per-hour sinkers, I don't think they want to fix that problem, Joe. I think that Rob kind of hit it on the head where he said that these are specialists now. They don't go nine innings. They don't, you know, pitch into the 14th inning. They don't. It's not Warren Spahn anymore. That's not what's going on. And I don't think that you can monitor it as well. You just don't know. It's one pitch, right? So if I'm out there and I'm throwing 100 miles an hour, all of a sudden my arm is sore and I walk off the mound. And what can anybody really do to know that that next pitch is going to be the one? And that's usually what it is in baseball. Whereas in football, you can kind of slow the train down a bit and have a different effect and kind of interfere to make things safer. In baseball, especially with pitchers, and they are going through them, Joe, I agree with you 100%. And Tommy John is not, we act like it's a simple procedure, but it's not. I mean, it's major surgery, but I think that baseball has it the way they want it. Think about, can you imagine, Joe and Rob, a World Series game 30 years ago where each inning they're throwing another specialist in a World Series game? That kind of stuff just didn't happen, but it happens now because these pitchers are specialists and they're made to throw to so many right-handers, so many left-handers, or people that can't hit the sinker. I mean, it's just, as you say, analytics and statistics are what baseball's all about, and that's what's ruling the roost. I don't think there's any motivation to change it, Joe, and I don't think you can stop it enough to – I mean, you could say, okay, everybody's going to throw four innings. Throwing 100-mile-per-hour gas and 92-mile-per-hour sinkers, you may go out in the third inning, Joe. So I don't think baseball is motivated to change it.
And Rick, by the way, to your point, that the World Series back in the day when you would have those bullpens, you knew that when some of those guys were coming in from that bullpen that something was going really wrong for the other team. To your point, guys were made to go deep into a game and bring in one or two relievers to kind of close it out, not this laundry list of six, seven guys that are going to come through. But, and Joe, to your point, you know, a concussion is definitely more serious of an injury than a shoulder, so that's the first thing, or an elbow. And then maybe even the idea that we have guaranteed contracts in baseball makes it less of an issue for the league as a whole, because a guy that has this elbow or shoulder injury most times is still going to get paid and still stay on their contract as they recover, whereas in other sports it's a little bit easier to kind of get away from somebody that's had these major injuries. I think all of these are factors.
No, that's a great point. I mean, if you consider that and there's no cap and you don't have to worry about it, you don't have to worry about counting guys. Like NHL, they have to literally sometimes they're playing with a short bench because they have to stay under the cap, right? Baseball doesn't have to worry about that. Oh, I've got five guys that are out. Like you said, Tampa's lost half the rotation to Tommy John. And they can just go out and sign some other guys, right? Like it doesn't matter. They might not be good this year, but they can go out and replace them, and there'll be other guys that can step in and do that. I find that interesting. And I also think that, you know, some of the rule changes, and we'll get into this because I'd like to dissect the rule changes by rule change. But do you, you know, let's back up, and I'll let Rick answer this question first. Baseball's gone through a lot of rule changes over the last couple of years to speed up the game, to make it more exciting for fans. The days of the 5.5-hour games are long in the past, and a lot of their fans just really can't, you know, the attention span of some of the, you know, the millennials to the Gen Z's and now the Gen Alphas just isn't there to watch a game like they used to. Has the pitch clock and the time that they have, do you like that part of the game now? Is that also contributing to the injury thing? Or is it something just as necessary to keep the game going so that we could keep it within the 3-hour window that most people are used to when they're watching other sports?
Boy, that's a great question. It encompasses a whole lot of stuff, doesn't it, Joe? You know,
sure does.
I was one of those baseball purists, and when they were talking about some of these crazy rule changes, I'm like, holy mackerel, what are you talking about? You can't do that to baseball. But if you don't grow and if you don't attract a younger audience, geezers start to, like me, start to fall off the wayside, and baseball's not going to survive that way. So then they made the big changes. Do I like the idea that, that the clock is quickened the game to less than 3 hours and bringing a new group of people to baseball? Yeah, you got to like it. Didn't like it at first, but I like it now because it has made a change, and I do like the quicker games. When I go to a ball game, go up to Phoenix and watch a whole bunch of baseball, you know, I do like that it's 2 hours and 48 minutes. I think that that's a good thing. Do I like the idea that the baseball bag was extended a couple of inches so that we could get more steals? Yeah, I think that that's more exciting than home runs and strikeouts on 92-mile-per-hour sinkers. Do I like the idea that somebody starts off on second base in the 10th inning? Boy, I'm still having trouble with that one, Joe and Rob. But you know, if it's
you're jumping ahead.
Inning,
I was
going
to save
go to
those.
Work.
You're taking all my questions, damn it. No, go ahead. Keep rolling. I'll catch you. I got a few more. Don't worry. I got a whole bag of this over here. So just keep going.
I'll slow my roll so I don't take all your stuff, Joe. But it's if it's the 14th inning and it's 12:30 at night, I got to go to work in the morning. Do I like that guy on second base? Well, yeah, then I like it. So even though I'm a purist, I think the changes have been good. And the last point I want to make, Joe and Rob, is that I was reading an article the other day by Tony Clark, you know, the union head chief, and they were talking about all the changes last year and how good I think that the majority of them were, you guys. The idea that they were talking about dropping the 20-second clock with men on base to 18 seconds, I'm like, okay, hold on. You got the game down from 3.5 hours to 2 hours and 40 minutes. Do you really have to take 2 seconds off of the man on base for a pitcher? And then that gets to your point, Joe, causing more injuries. If a pitcher is not focusing on what he's doing and what the next pitch is and what's the next batter coming to do and what does he have to do, all of a sudden he's like, I got 18 seconds. Is this guy going to steal a base? Is this good? You know, and I think that maybe that makes him rush. And that's hypothetical or theoretical or whatever it may be. But I think that's a problem. Now all of a sudden, can't you leave it alone for a year and let's work it out, Rob and Joe? I mean, 18 seconds, 2 seconds? Come on, guys.
Yeah, and, you know, Rick, I agree everything what Rick said there. I mean, the fans were coming out in force because they liked the shorter games. I mean, and I'm a purist. I didn't think I was going to like any of it, but you can't deny the effect it's having on the fans, the younger fans for sure. So it is making the game a little bit different, a little bit more exciting. I like the base running that's going on. Again, all of these things, we're seeing these younger teams that are capitalizing on these rules because, again, they're first of all, younger guys. They've been playing around with it a little bit in the minor leagues. And even the ability to throw over to first. I mean, I saw a video the other day of a pitcher that threw over 18 consecutive times to try to keep Vince Coleman on first base. And then on the 19th, you know, the 19th try, he throws a pitch. And what does Vince do? He steals second base. So, I mean, that's the way it was back, you know, in the 80s for sure, when Vince was running all over the town. But we can't just deny the effect it's had on fans and the game as a whole. And if we're, you know, we're moving forward with the game, I think it's the right thing. And I don't know if you would have told me this time last year going into the season, I would have agreed. I don't think I would have said that. I think I might have been more skeptical of the effect it would have had. And then even look at some of the veteran pitchers. Veteran pitchers really struggled, certainly early on in the season, if not throughout, with the pitch clock. They've never really dealt with it. The younger pitchers, again, coming up, they were able to kind of handle that. They were more equipped to deal with these game changes. That's why younger teams right now are the ones to really look at because they're better prepared than some of the veterans that have been playing this game a little bit longer than they have.
Well, I got to say, I really do like the pitch clock. I think it makes the game more interesting. It moves it along. And look, I'm a fan of stolen bases. My favorite player growing up back in the day was Ricky Henderson, right? Yeah. And for a while there, analytics was telling you, do not run, do not steal, because if you get caught stealing, you know, that's a bad thing because getting it out is the worst thing you can do, right? Like that kind of stuff. Or, you know, the Mark Teixeiras of the world that would just foul off 12 balls because we want to get to the middle relief, right, and things like that. You're like, oh, God, it's just it was strategic and in some cases very tactical, but it really killed the game. It reminded me so much of the 90s when the NHL, you know, just the 2-1 games where you could hold and you can claw and you can grab and you can stick and, you know, they had to clean it up. They went on strike to clean it up to make the game faster, you know, and they brought in, you know, 3-on-3 overtimes and shootouts and things that were really attractive for the fans. And I'm glad that baseball has adjusted. And look, I speaking of purists, and Rick, I'm going to come back to you on this because you said you're a purist. The one rule that I love the most that changed was designated hitter National League. Are you, as a purist, as somebody has seen, you know, designated hitters, AL, you know, pitchers are going to have to, you know, step up into the batter's box. Has that bothered you or have you adjusted to it and been like, you know, I can live with that?
Boy, you opened up a can of worms there, Joe. You just had to go there.
I figured I would.
You know, that's great because, again, we keep getting into these situations where when it happened in the American League, I didn't like it. And then we had it for years and years and years. If one in one league didn't have it, one did have it. So at the All-Star game, you know, whoever threw left-handed got it in the World Series. The whole thing was getting ridiculous, right? So it's a situation where at this point, I'm glad that they have the DH. I think that extends some guys' careers so that they don't have to go in the field, and I really like that. And honestly, Joe and Rob, the idea that a pitcher was going to come to bat and maybe he was going to get plunked in the ribs or he was going to get hit in the hand. I mean, those guys, with those contracts they got now, no thank you. I don't think he ought to be up there when he doesn't know what he's doing. He's not going to provide any offense. And you mentioned the stolen bases. And what did that help to create, Joe and Rob? That helped to create the idea of more offense. And I think we needed that. Everybody was hitting home runs, and pitchers were striking everybody out. I think that the stolen base, bringing in the DH, making the little base a little bit bigger, I thought that was pretty cool. And I think that it creates some offense. It creates some excitement. And Rob had a good point with the young teams where they're recruiting speed now. These guys are just flying around the base paths, and it makes it fun, and it makes it exciting. So I didn't like it at first, Joe, but I've learned to live with it.
Well, I'm glad you've come to the dark side because I was there way before it happened. You know, and maybe it's because I'm an AL guy. Like, I loved the Oakland A's, the Bash Brothers. I loved, you know, that, I mean, you could go, I mean, the idea that you can throw a DH in the middle, even like the unfair, like the Yankees, where they just have professional hitters, right? Like the Paul O'Neills of the world that, you know, didn't take the field all that much, but it made it interesting. The minute you see a pitcher, you're like, oh, God. And what it does is two things.
Yeah.
One, you know it's an automatic out in most instances, unless they're Rick Rodin or somebody of that ilk that could actually hit 220. Right,
Bob
but
Darden.
You know if you take that out of the game, you add offense to it. It's there's never a point where it's boring because you know everybody in the lineup can hit, and or you know it's like, oh, they're going to get to the pitcher and they're going to take him out to put in a pinch hitter, and yeah, well, that's going to, you know, 5 minutes. I'm going to go make myself a sandwich, right? Or I'm going to change the channel, and you forget what you're doing, you know. And I just didn't like it. I liked the fact that the DH was there. And, you know, Rob, I don't know, do you agree with me? Are you a DH guy or, you know, are you like a purist that, you know, says, I don't like that at all. Let's go back to the way it used to be.
How about this? I'm going to sit on the fence with you guys on you guys. I'm going to tell you that I liked it when the National League allowed the pitchers to hit. And the American League had the DH. I felt like it was a little of both worlds. It differentiated the leagues. It showed that, you know, there's different strategy, of course, involved. So, and I grew up as a National League guy. So the idea that the double switch will never happen again or rarely ever again, and some of the strategy that would go into actually managing the game itself changes with a DH. But so I kind of like the old way where we had each league had a different set of rules. I know that we're changing and the league is moving in a different direction, and goodness, who knows how long we'll have a National League and American League. You know, I think that they're moving towards changing even that. But I guess in my purist world, we had a little of both worlds.
You know, it's funny you mention that, and I'm going to spin off a little bit here because, you know, I think it's odd to me that there's two different rules for two different leagues. And I'd love to get your opinion on this too, Rick, because I think Rob brings up an interesting point. You know, in football, the AFC plays the NFC. You rotate divisions every year, and the rules are the same. The football is the same size. The field is the same size. You know, in baseball, you know, or basketball or hockey, I mean, they're all standard. Everything is standardized. There used to be smaller hockey rinks like the Boston Gardens and things like that, but for the most part, that's all been changed and corrected. Baseball still is anachronistic in that sense. You have a short porch in right field for the Yankees, or you have, you know, a hill that you have to run up in Houston to catch a ball with a train coming at you. Like, really weird stuff where the fields are not uniform. The rules are not uniform. And you just, there's a dalliance. You, every now and then you play a team, and they've started to allow you playing across, you know, the leagues, right? Where in football, of course the Steelers are going to play the Cowboys or the Niners or somebody, you know, like it's going to happen every year. They don't play them all the time. They play, you know, twice in a division, a lot more in their conference, but they rotate and it's on a schedule and the rules are the same. Do you find, Rick, do you find that you could have different size fields and you could have different rules? I mean, is there something that's in it? Is there an inequity in there, or is it just the charm of the game and it's traditional and too bad and we'll have to live with it?
You know, another good question. I really like that. The reason I like that question so much, I was taking the wife to the airport this morning and she was talking about me playing golf this week. And I said, you know what? I said, the thing about it is I keep playing the same two or three same golf courses. I go, I love playing a golf course that I don't know a lot about. It's a little bit different, and it's got a different view. And so there's something to be said for different rules and the charm of a different kind of ballpark and Camden Yard. I think that that's crucial. And I think that the idea of, you know, interleague play is great. Obviously, the Mets playing the Yankees. I mean, come on, that's, you have to see that. So the Steelers and teams playing together in the NFL is just the way it's going to be. It's like it's a normal thing, whereas in baseball, the idea that the American League is going to play the National League, I mean, that was, wow, that was terrible 15 years ago. And now I like it. I think it does. Charm is a great word, Joe. I think that it does make baseball a little bit what it is. I'm not crazy about that porch in Yankee Stadium right field. But it is part of what baseball's all about. Maybe we need to keep a few of those things around, Joe.
How about you, Rob? Do you like the fact? It sounds to me like you do. I mean, you kind
of
were leaning that way.
Yeah.
I mean, doesn't it make it? Is there an inequity in that though? Like, is there? Like, yeah, I love the Subway Series. I think that's great. But why isn't there a Subway Series? Why hasn't there been a Subway Series? Or you know, the Cubbies going to play the White Sox makes sense to me. But like. Like the Mariners and the Pirates they're not on a rotation. Like you don't see that all that often. But it would be cool as a fan to see that. Why did baseball have these? Why do they still have these fences up?
You know, well, I think it's a uniquely different game, and let's call it for what it is. I mean, it's just played differently. It's not moving something from one side of the field to another. We have unique stadiums. We have unique fields. You know, there was that time in the 60s and 70s, they were building the cookie cutters. I'm putting air quotes around it, of stadiums. I mean, you guys had one in Pittsburgh for a while, didn't you? And
horrible.
Yeah, and fans wanted something different. And, you know, I guess Camden Yards really opened that up again. And that changed the way we looked at how we were building stadiums for fans and for the experience. So to that end, the idea that, you know, a National League that had no DH and American League with a DH with unique stadiums with unique fields and unique feels to the game when you go, I think it's all part of it and it makes it uniquely a different sport. So that's what I've always missed. I know it's changing again and I'll go with the flow. I'm a baseball lifer and I see the value of what they're doing because it is attracting younger fans. They need that. You know, Rick said that, you know, the old timers like myself, like, you know, I'm not going to be around watching these games forever. Someone's got to take my place. So they're doing the right thing by making the changes now.
Look, guys, we're coming to the end of the show. I've got one last question for you because we've talked about the last season. We talked about this coming season. I want to talk a little bit about the future of baseball because we've talked so much about the past and its traditions. MLB is looking to expand. And, you know, I've heard, you know, that Charlotte might be in the running. New Orleans might be in the running. Obviously, there's all sorts of talk about teams moving. We've seen that already in places. You know, in the next 5 years, is it healthy for baseball to expand? Are we ready for that? Or would you guys prefer it to stay the same or even contract? You know, I know that, you know, leagues have done that in the past. I mean, and, you know, Rick, I'll start with you, and then we'll go over to Rob to get his opinion before we close this out. But is expansion, in your eyes, a good thing? And, you know, or would you rather baseball stay the same or even get smaller?
I'm in favor of expansion. I think that with the size of these contracts that people are coming up with, I think that you need to continue to grow. And there are some great cities that, again, you mentioned Charlotte, you mentioned Nashville and New Orleans, and even cities like Portland and Sacramento. I mean, I think those are some great baseball places. The situation with Oakland and Las Vegas is a tad convoluted, and that's not going real smoothly. But I think that it's in the best interest, again, to grow the base and to get some more money involved and get interest. Then, you know, obviously there's the Tampa Bay and the most importantly the Marlins, and those are a little bit distressing. And then the Diamondbacks, you know, $3.5 million their very first year they attracted, and then that went down and down. But you know, you put a winning team on the field, and Diamondbacks proved that last year by attracting over $2 million again. So I think I'm in favor of expansion. I'm not sure where, but there's a situation. I'll wrap it up here, Joe and Rob. But there's a situation where these billionaire owners are always used that as a threat, right? They're always saying, well, they're talking about it here in Arizona, guys. The Diamondbacks already saying, well, my lease runs out at Chase Field in 2027, and if I don't get some concessions or a brand new stadium, you know, we do not want to go anywhere else. I promise you that. But so you keep getting the but question, right? So, you know, is that a threat, or are they trying to get us here in Arizona to pay a new tax so we can have ballparks for billionaires? I'm not sure. And look, honestly, Chase Field, I don't like it either. So it's not a great field, not well designed. I mean, fields like Camden Yards make it seem like, you know, it's dark and foreboding and never was a great place. But I'm in favor, Joe, of expansion, and I think it's the direction Major League Ball is going to go.
Rob, how about you, man? Would you like to see expansion, or do you want it to stay the same?
Well, I mean, as a purist, I would like to keep it where it is. But as a realist, I know that they got to keep moving forward. And I know that expansion is certainly going to be happening. You know, I hear, you know, Nashville, you know, we named some of the cities, maybe even Salt Lake. I'm also a Rick, the idea that these owners that hold up these towns about, I want a new stadium or I'm going to move them to X, Y, or Z. I think that that's something that needs to be dealt with at the major league level there. There's something wrong there. But we have to keep building it, and I think where they're headed is that we're going to get rid of the term National League and American League. I think we're going to see geographic division sooner or later, and the game will change yet again, and maybe for the better. But I'm always willing to take a look at some of the things they're doing to change stuff to bring in the new fans, as long as we're given, you know, we're keeping and giving the fans a great experience. They're going to come out, and even you see some of these new stadiums that are going to be built, they're building them a little smaller than they ever have. Just less fans, just to make it more intimate and give them the very best experience. That's what's going to bring people back. And then building a winner through these young teams, that'll get them there. So, yeah, they're going to have to expand, and I expect that will be happening real soon.
Well, gents, we have about a minute left. Before I let you guys go, Rick, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you, and then Rob, follow up, and then you know, I'll kick you guys off the Blog Talk radio airwaves for tonight, and thank you for being on. But, you know, Rick, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, you can contact me at my email is rmafss@aol.com. I'm doing usually a weekly show with Leo and Night Sports. Also been doing, now the football season's over, I was doing a show, radio show up in Pittsburgh. So staying busy and enjoying it. And great show, Joe. I really enjoyed it. It was fun.
Well, it was a pleasure having you on. Rob, how can people get a hold of you?
You can find me on Amped Up Sports, and we're on Facebook and other social media. That's where you'll find my baseball writing. And I also had a great time just talking baseball with you, Joe and Rick. It's been fantastic. Thank you.
Well, it's been my pleasure. Again, for everybody listening, Rick Moore, Rob Preet, check them out at their socials. Check them out online. Email them any questions you may have. And not only a big thanks to our guests, but also a big thanks to our sponsor, iHeartMedia, where you can find all your favorite music, radio, and podcasts all for free all the time. And remember, while Draft Nation may be off the air, we are always on the clock for you. Thanks again, gentlemen. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.